We can hear at the moment, but we're pleased to welcome Judge, soon to be Judge Wallace Jefferson of the San Antonio Bar, who is watching oral arguments. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in the interest of A.D.
May it please the court, Ms. Rhonda Presley, present argument from petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, there really is no vested right not to pay court ordered child support. To find a vested right that it could hold was impermissibly impaired by the issuance of the administrative writ of withholding in this case.
Why wouldn't the same thing be true of any damages that would be due under a new cause of action that the legislature created? Like the DGPA, for example. When they created it only prospectively. But can you make the same argument then? Well, there's no vested right not to cheat people and get away with it. So you should be able to go ahead and get damages.
Well, my argument isn't limited to that at all.
Wouldn't it be fair to say that this, I forgot his name, but this gentleman, had he been aware of the law and been reading the law and keeping up with it, knew for a certain period of time that he was going to be subject to the possibility of having to pay this child support. But had he been reading the law, he would have seen that, by golly, it looks like that time escaped because 4 years plus 18 years of age, and he's free, he doesn't have to pay anything. So he felt confident, sure, and certain that he was not going to be obligated to pay anything. And then, by golly, they changed the rules on him, and suddenly he is subject to paying again. Why is that not a problem?
I don't think that he could have had a legitimate expectation that the law was never going to change. To be legitimate, that expectation would have to be backed by some legal authority to make it legitimate, and there is none.
What about if the court doesn't have jurisdiction? There's no way to enforce what your claim is.
To enforce an administrative writ?
If the court can't hear it, isn't that a legitimate expectation that you can't be found liable if the court can't hear the case at all? In other words, as I understand your argument, you're drawing the difference between the limitations and jurisdiction. In your view, this series of statutes involve jurisdiction. Ergo, there's no vested right because the legislature can change procedural jurisdiction things as they want, which they did here. Mm-hmm. But isn't there some expectation that you know before that there was a series of laws that said the court no longer has jurisdiction after 4 years to enforce this obligation, even though it's child support, that you have an expectation there's no court that can order you to do it after that date goes by. But then all of a sudden, 8 years later, they say, well, we're going to do something different.
That scenario has happened before in two cases, Wilbanks and Kuykendall, and in both cases, the extension of jurisdiction after a lapse was upheld in one case.
Well, I'm not saying they can't do it. The question is the retrospective application of what they've done to somebody who already thought there was no jurisdiction to enforce this debt, just debt.
These cases actually did what Your Honor is positing, I believe. In one case, all enforcement jurisdiction had ceased. There was no way to enforce the child support obligation against the obligor. Subsequently, the legislature passed a law that gave the court extra jurisdiction, about 6 months, to hold an obligor in contempt. After enforcement jurisdiction had expired, this rule was enacted,
suit was brought. He was held in contempt under the subsequently enacted law and denied a writ of habeas corpus after challenging that it was a retroactive and permanent constitutional law as applied to him.
For an administrative writ to be issued under Section 158.502, must an arrearage be reduced to judgment, or as a result of the records that indicate non-payment, can the administrative writ issue without any court action identifying the amount due in due effect?
It would issue generally without court action, because the reason the administrative writ of withholding was enacted was to comply with federal requirements that every state title board be able to issue a writ without any action from any other administrative or judicial authority.
Well, that gets to the heart of my question then, how this particular statutory provision dovetails with the provisions about court jurisdiction with respect to child support matters. If this operates independently of any action by a court, and it does say that the administrative writ may be issued at any time, what is the effect then of the statute reflecting whether or not a court has jurisdiction? Is there any interplay with that, or is this operating separately? You see what I mean? It's kind of a metaphysical kind of question, but I see this as operating over here separate and apart from questions relating to the continuing jurisdiction of a court.
I think I asked a similar question of the Ninth Court, but they thought they were inextricably linked.
Oh, no, that's my question to you. I mean, is this such a separate animal that it is unrelated as a result of the federal requirements and so on and so forth, that it's operating separate and apart from the jurisdictional requirements?
I think it's operating separately, not merely because of the federal requirements, but that it is operating separately out of the executive branch. It's not a judicial remedy at all.
Well, if we were to determine that this particular statute, which is what we're really dealing with here, were to have some limitation on it that could not be affected, what would be the effect with our relationship with the federal government for not having this procedure in place or there being some limitation right into it?
I don't think there would be any implication with the federal government if it was allowed to operate prospectively.
I understand, but they're the ones who said you've got to have something like this in place.
Yes.
So if we were to interpret this in a way that limited the effectiveness of this administrative writ, what other implications or consequences flow from that interpretation vis-a-vis our child support in the state?
Oh, well, it might be that we need to spend out of compliance and the federal money.
All right, let me ask you, what if Mr. Davis had, in fact, paid child support payments directly, and there were no record of that with the Attorney General's office, and received this administrative writ, where would he go?
He would go to the Jefferson County Child Support Department. He was ordered to pay his child support through Jefferson County Child Support Department.
And if there was
my
question is, what if he paid her directly rather than through the child support office? And his defense is, I paid her directly, I just didn't send it through the child support office, therefore I had met my obligation. Who would decide whether the writ was appropriate?
In the first instance, before the agency, the Attorney General would decide he must go through an administrative review. And then if you're unsatisfied, a court could decide. I would point out, in however, that we do bear the burden of proving up the arrearage that we claim, and in this case, in fact, we did admit into evidence the pay records which were debt.
Well, right, but again, my question being, if he had paid outside of that, of course your records would show that, if he had in fact paid her directly. And what if there was a dispute between them? He said, I paid her directly for many years and she accepted it, but and we both sort of agreed that that was okay, but your records show no payment, so you bring the administrative writ even without her being there. You can do that without her presence or pushing for it, is my understanding. And so what if there was an evidentiary point as to whether this had in fact been paid directly and there was some defense? I guess my question is procedural. Where would he go to resolve that issue?
Well, in the first instance, to the agency. My opinion would be he could have protected himself by doing what the court order said.
And the court would have jurisdiction to hear that.
Yes. I mean, that's specifically provided for in Chapter 158.5 L1.5 of the Citizens. That the court can review that for an administrator.
That's a separate jurisdictional provision then, tied into Section 158.
Yes, it is in that part of the code. It's not in Chapter 157 dealing with enforcement.
Right, it's in 158. It's an entirely separate procedure. It's triggered by the administrative writ, and if there's a challenge, there are basic administrative procedures and then an alternative for and then a follow-up judicial review under Section 158.
Correct. That's correct. Now, we think that the expiration of jurisdiction and the expiration of a statute of limitation on judgments or court signed withholding orders are different, because when the statute of limitation expires, you are properly asserted defense would end up in a take-nothing judgment. It constitutes a judgment on merit. It has preclusive effect. No one can really sue you again. On the other hand, if suit is brought, let's say, in a child enforcement proceeding after the 4-year provision, the court below is relying on right now, the proper disposition would have been a dismissal for want of jurisdiction. That is not on the merit. All it does is place the parties where they were at the very beginning. It does nothing to this case.
Except that the Attorney General has an administrative process to collect it, even though a court doesn't have jurisdiction to enter a judgment of enforcement.
Well, I don't think it does very much even to the court. Well, she's got nothing that says that court didn't have jurisdiction of this suit at this time. He's got nothing on the merits. It wouldn't preclude a second action that was timely filed if the legislature extended the jurisdiction.
So, for example, in the DTPA, businesses of a certain size are not consumers. If the legislature repealed that differentiation, said anybody's a consumer, could then a suit be brought for conduct that occurred 3 or 4 years ago by businesses of that were that size?
Struggling to analogize it.
Well, you're enlarging the cause of action.
We're extending the jurisdiction. It really isn't a cause of action. I mean, this court has said that none of these are causes of action, that the cause of action is the original adjudication of this court obligation, and that each of these is only a remedy to enforce the original judgment, the original adjudication.
But it's quite a remedy that at first only goes back a few years and then is extended to go back indefinitely. That's quite a change in remedy.
It's not that it only went back a few years. And if you filed for an arrearage judgment in 1993, you could go back indefinitely to the very beginning of the child support.
You're saying that there's no... Well, nearly 20 years ago, this court rooted around and found a statute of limitation for these types of cases in Howe. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
A 10-year statute of limitation. And then the legislature came in and put limitations. You say not, they didn't fool with statute of limitation. They put limitation on the jurisdiction of the court.
Yes.
Rather than a statute of limitations.
Rather than saying a party may bring suit to obtain an arrearage judgment within so many years of the accrual of the cause of action, what they said is the court may not enter the judgment.
And now that's been removed.
As 1993, that was
why then doesn't the 10-year, if the legislature never fiddled with the statute of limitations, why doesn't our Huff case now control, and there's a 10-year statute of limitations.
At the same time that the legislature repealed that provision in 1993, they added two things to what we've been Section 1441. One, a provision for a cumulative judgment, and language that said that the court must confirm and enter judgment for all child support. All would not be limited to 10 years.
So are you contending there is no statute of limitations now?
There is no statute of limitations. There was a brief period when Hobbs was applicable. There hasn't been since any more than there is, for instance, a statute of limitations applicable to modifications.
So you're saying that as we stand today, there is no time period within which this type of action must be brought. It can be brought at any time in the course of history.
It can be brought at any time until all child support, including arrearages and interest, are paid. Yes, the legislative intent for child support and forfeiture remedies to remain available, for child support to be paid, and for child support awards not to be able to evade their child support obligations or ignore the court order.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
Your question with a quote from Ex Parte Abel. There we said, retroactive laws have been upheld when no vested substantive right has been impaired, but only the procedure or remedy has been changed. And then we go on to say, the following changes have been held to be remedial. Authorization of additional remedy for collecting past due child support.
That is the Harrison case. I believe it also cites Dupree. Now, Harrison was a case, I believe, where the legislature enacted a withholding statute. Dupree was a case where the legislature had changed the child support obligation age from 16 to 18. Now, both of these changes, both of these legislative changes, took place at a time when the child support obligation was ongoing under the terms of Dupree. For example, in Dupree, the child was 10 years old. When the legislature enacted the withholding statute, I believe that's the issue of Harrison, the child support obligation was active. It's alive.
But doesn't that beg the question? I mean, the statement here is that regardless of that, it's still remedial in nature, and because of that, it can't affect a vested right. Regardless of the particular facts of that case, how do we get around the concept that this is a remedial provision?
Your Honor, I don't know that it's necessary to do so. There is some language in some of the cases that says purely remedial statutes confer no vested rights on defendants or obligors. But there are also cases that talk in terms of adding additional remedies as being prohibited under the anti-retroactive provision of the Texas Constitution.
But this is not an additional remedy. It's adding jurisdiction. It's not adding a new remedy, more penalties, more payments. It's just adding a period of time for collection, and that would seem to me to fit under the purely remedial statements that we make in, well, that we differentiated in Ex parte Abel.
Your Honor, I believe that adding, when the legislature added the 3-year statute of limitations to the progression of Tracy cases, it simply extended the time in which the existing remedies could be enforced. I think the same rationale would apply there.
But we have said, haven't we, that this is not a statute of limitation. We've clearly said that. So how can you analogize to a pure statute of limitation?
I don't believe that this rule is ever. I don't believe that this statute is a pure statute of limitation. I believe that the Beaumont Court was correct in CLC when it said it is not merely a statute of limitation. To speak in terms of the statute, that the statute of limitation is only half true. This is a hybrid statute. This statute is a limitation, for example, in 1994. This status lost her right to bring an enforcement action for child support arrearages. At exactly the same time, and in the same statute, the court of continuing jurisdiction lost subject matter jurisdiction to hear that claim. It is the two.
All right, well, let me, before you get any further into that distinction, couldn't the legislature have just clearly phrased this as a statute of limitations? What was the purpose in phrasing this in terms of jurisdiction? It would have been easy to phrase it as a statute of limitations.
The legislature calls it a time limitation.
Well, but why did they word it in terms of jurisdiction? Why did they make the choice to do that?
And I may go back to
Tuff. Well, and let me just add another overlay to my question. There have been cases that have held this is not a statute of limitations. Maybe not our court. But other courts, many courts, have held this is not a statute of limitations. The legislature has chosen to amend the statute many times and has never changed the wording, presumably being conscious of those decisions. So hasn't the legislature, in effect, agreed that this is not a statute of limitations? It's merely jurisdictional.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. As Justice Heck pointed out in one of his decisions, the legislature may have approved the result without necessarily agreeing with the reason of the text. That's the legislative doctrine. Now, let me say that in Huff, in 1983, when Texas Supreme Court decided that was trying to wrangle with the issue of statute of limitations, child support collection efforts. The Supreme Court ruled that the 10-year statute of limitations applicable to judgments applied. And the judgment in this case would have been the divorce decree or whatever subsequent order ordered child support. Subsequent to this action, the legislature, and the case dealt with Greg Hassan, the court ruled that the jurisdiction of the court expired in the child of the state team, so the policy would have been missed in the marriage. The legislature enacted Section 1441, I believe it's 1985. 1441 means provided two things. One is that child support arrearages could be enforced for 10 years from the date that the action was brought. The other thing it provided is that the jurisdiction of the court was extended for 2 years. There was another 2 years after the child emancipated or after the obligation ceased under the terms of the decree for the obligation to bring the action and extend the jurisdiction of the court for that 2 years. However, this was essentially a floating statute of limitations. In other words, if you got divorced when the child was 1 year old, then whenever the child was 12 years old, you lost whatever child support had not been paid prior in that 10-year period. When the child was 17 years old, if the obligor had not paid child support for the first 2 years of the order, the obligee lost the right to enforce that by reduction to judgment. In 1993, I believe it was, and I will point out that all of these cases either ruled on the 10-year statute, 1441B, or based their decisions on the rulings that interpreted 1441B, the 10-year statute. In 1993, that 10-year provision was removed. That changed the complexion of the statute entirely. No longer did you have this floating 10-year statute in here where the obligee was denied the right to bring an action so long as the arrearages were over 10 years old. Now, in effective 1993, the obligee could bring an action for the entire range, and there was a 4-year extra jurisdictional period during which the obligee had to bring her action. And this jurisdiction doesn't exist in the vacuum. The statute requires that a motion for enforcement be brought. If the motion for enforcement is not brought, then that extra jurisdictional, or the extended jurisdiction, the subject matter jurisdiction is not invoked. So it is a time limitation. The time limitation on the right of the obligee to bring an action is a time limitation on subject matter jurisdiction of the court of continuing jurisdiction.
So you read these time limitations to be similar to a statute of limitations?
I'm sorry?
You read these time limitations to be similar to a statute of limitations?
I do. Similar to. They are not statutes of limitations. It is a hybrid statute. Chapter 21 of the Texas Labor Code is an excellent example. Justice Heck is talking about the DPA, and I think that the answer to Justice Heck's question is no. At the time that the employer or the business committed the act to complain of, he was immune under the statute. I believe that to apply the statute to that business would be a violation of the contract.
And I take that would be your view of the situation if having exempted certain professional conduct from DTPA liability the last session or two, whenever they did it, if they then went back and repealed that exception, that would have problems too, in your view.
I believe it would. But I was going to give an example that's very similar to that one. Under Chapter 21 of the Texas Labor Code, we have two components. Now, they're separate. They're not like this statute where we have a hybrid statute. We have two entirely separate components. One is a purely jurisdictional component. That is that unless the employer has 15 or more employees, the court does not have subject matter jurisdiction to entertain a claim. The other component is the employee has specific time limits within which to bring any complaint against the employer based on discrimination. this statute differs from a purely jurisdictional or a purely limitation statute. This is a hybrid statute. It imposes a time limitation on the obligee because it is her right. Many of these cases, most of these cases, in fact, talk about collection efforts at a time when the child is in the home or shelter there. Most of these cases, most of the cases that are coming up under the administrative holding statutes involve children. In my case, for example, I think the child is about 32 years old. I've heard from lawyers all over the state of Texas.
But isn't that just because we haven't had the enforcement mechanisms in place, and so people who have escaped their obligations to pay child support are just now getting caught up? I mean, our enforcement mechanisms have not been effective.
No, ma'am. At the time that this statute expired,
you don't think we've had a problem in the state collecting child support and making certain that those that attempt to escape their obligations are forced to do so?
I'm sorry. Either I misunderstood the question or the court misunderstood the answer. Yes, there has been a problem. What I'm saying, in this case, Ms. Davis had 4 years from after the time that child left home.
But I'm just saying, but my point is that you're painting a picture of the fact that there are a lot of these people who have now exceeded the age of majority, and now as support is being collected for them, and your complaints about that. And my question to you is, if that's a result of the fact that we have had a crisis in the area of collection of child support, and we're now seeking to remedy that circumstance with such administrative remedies as are available now, and that's why we're seeing this happening at this point in time.
I didn't concede that term. I would point out that the legislature, like the courts, must operate under the constraints of the Texas Constitution.
What is the vested right? That you claim is being impaired.
The vested right is the expectation of finality. As I was going to say, I wanted to open my argument with a quote from Baker Hughes: to permit barred claims to be revived years later will undermine society's interest in repose, which is one of the principal justifications for statutes and limitations. Thus, we have written that a statute extending the limitations period of a claim already barred by limitation.
But Ms. Presley says that this is not a cause of action, that in fact the cause of action was the original claim for child support that was adjudicated and reduced to a judgment. And in fact, we're past the point where we're dealing with causes of action and whether claims are barred, and what we're dealing with now is a remedy to enforce the judgment, as opposed to the Baker Hughes type of circumstance we're dealing with the original cause of action. Would you respond to her argument on that? I think that's what I understand her response is.
I'll respond, Your Honor. In fact, that's not the case. At least, there was a judgment for child support taken in this case many, many, many years ago.
And you never passed. Or pay very little.
Are paid very little. I don't know exactly what the numbers are. In fact, no evidence was taken at the lower level, so I'm not even sure. I know it's disputed, but other than that.
But we do have a judgment.
From many, many, many,
there
many
is a judgment in place that obligated him to pay child support. So the question of whether he was obligated to pay and how much, and her claim that he should pay and how much, has already been adjudicated and reduced to judgment.
The issue of whether he should pay and how much was adjudicated at the time that the child support order was entered.
That's what I mean. There is a judgment in place adjudicating his obligation to pay support and the amount of that support.
That's correct.
Okay.
But that's not a judgment of adjudication of arrearages.
No, sir.
There's no judgment for arrearages in this
correct.
Case.
That's correct.
So it's two different concepts.
Yes, that's correct.
Multiple judgments in this case,
no,
reducing your marriages?
No, ma'am. We have one. are not based on judgments. These writs are based on the records according to the computer files, as I understand this, explained this before the appeals about the system issue, based on the records, the computer records in the Attorney General's office. They're not passed on by any court. The question that Justice O'Neill raised is one that I think is going to be extremely problematic in these cases. Years and years ago, it was very, very common for the parties to pay directly because the child support offices were set up so that there was a time lapse, sometimes a significant time lapse between the time that the obligor paid and the obligee got the money. So they would make a deal where he would pay directly. And at that time, it was not a big deal. Over the years, it developed into a big deal, and most of the divorce decrees these days say child support payments made outside of, or other than as directed by this order will be considered in addition to rather than in lieu of child support payments. In other words, if you don't pay the child support clerk, then it's considered a gift. So that resolved that issue, but we still had a situation where years ago, it was a very, very common circumstance.
Any other questions?
Let me just go back to your position is not that he has a vested right not to pay child support. Is that right?
That's correct.
He has a vested right
to rely on the time limitation statutes in effect at the time those limitations run.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
When CLC said that tolling provisions are not going to apply because the statute was jurisdictional and denied an obligee all recovery of arrears, when other cases told obligees that the obligor's failure to assert this defense at trial would not be a waiver because jurisdiction can't be waived and it can be raised for the first time on appeal, what are the legitimate expectations of the obligees? Could they have expected 10, 15 years later for the same court to turn around and say, no, it's really a statute of limitation. With statute of limitation consequences, should the tolling provisions have applied? Counsel does not take issue with those results. He's quite honest in wanting a hybrid. But a hybrid is an exception. What respondent is asking this court to do is to create an exception. It's a hybrid monster that is so far unknown to the law, and it has some of the characteristics of jurisdiction. And one characteristic that he likes of statute of limitation that he vesting. And we'll put them together so that he can have the best of both worlds, the benefit of each. And that maximizes the obstacle, of course, to the obligee, which is certainly not legislative intent. For about 25 years, the legislature has increasingly extended jurisdiction from 2 years to 4 years. They took away the 10 years. Then they put in 157, 269, that if a court rendered a judgment for the payment of arrears, it retained jurisdiction until all of those were paid. Now it's taken away any limit to jurisdiction. Where is that? Where? Okay. We have not been cited to a single case where a court has said that when those extensions of jurisdiction occurred, there was an unconstitutional impairment of a vested right.
Well, have there been cases from other courts that have dealt with this issue in other states?
I really didn't look into other states because this dealt with a statute that was peculiar to Texas.
Is it peculiar to Texas? Are there any other states that have similar statutes?
I don't know if they do. I think most of them do not have statutes that are similar.
Are most other state statutes more statute of limitations type statutes?
Some of them are. Some of them are unlimited. In California, I was told, didn't have arrearage judgment.
you just haven't
quite
looked.
Different. But trying to compare each state statute and how they work with whether they had a constitutional provision like ours that was interpreted like ours, I just didn't think it was very
Do you think the legislature's purpose in making the time periods jurisdictional was so that it could not be waived, it could be inserted at any time, even on appeal?
I think the legislature reserved for itself the right to change. They do so almost every session.
No, but I mean, when they made the time period jurisdictional, did they do that instead of making it a limitation because they wanted parties to be able to raise it at any time, even on appeal?
Oh, no, I don't think that was their consideration, although it may have been to somebody. I think they were reserving to themselves the right to change as needed, that the legislature has the right to create remedies as needed to correct problems in the state. And it, by doing so, by not creating statute of limitations, by distinctly refusing to create a statute of limitations, disabuse any potential litigant of the idea we're going to get any vested rights. The repeal, for instance, in 1993 of the 10-year provision, there was a case in which an obligor said, once it was repealed, that he had had a vested right against enforcement of installments that had become due more than 10 years before the repeal of the statute. And in that case, the court said, no, that provision was also jurisdictional, and so your claim is without merit. There is not a single case cited in which a child support remedy or the extension of jurisdiction, even where jurisdiction can lapse, has been held to be impermissibly unconstitutional. There is not a single case in which an appellate court held that any of these provisions were treated as statute of limitations, given statutes of limitation consequences and the law governing statute of limitation imported into it.
Any other questions? I have one.
Do you agree with the discussion about this 1997 enactment was to comply with the federal mandate, and so you had to have this provision to allow administrative withholding rates? So that it goes forward from that point, that means compliance, so you don't lose federal funds. Is that correct?
I thought I was beginning to say that before, and I asked the question. I don't, the federal mandate does not, just as you must have this administrative writ to collect the child support, that it can't require that it goes to an administrative or judicial tribunal. It does not say how much child support you have to collect over one year.
No, I understand, but this legislation satisfies the federal requirement.
Yes, sir.
From the date forward of this enactment. In other words, it was enacted in 1997, so every year after that, it's in compliance with the federal requirement. Is that right?
Well, yeah,
so you get the federal
requirement, except that you couldn't collect, but you couldn't.
No, I'm not, aside from whether you're collecting or not, as long as this statute's there, the state of Texas gets federal money involved for child support purposes.
Of course.
So my next question is, if we hold in this case, on its back, mm-hmm. and make that holding, that this 1997 thing doesn't apply to him because of what was in effect in 1990. What?
I don't think federal funds
would
be
implicated
in that.
That's what that, okay, thank you.
Anything else? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the second case. We'll take another recess.
All right.